Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, chair of the club's Grown-Ups Forum, and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Pat McHenry Sullivan. Pat is founder of Visionary Resources in Oakland, California. And she's author of the forthcoming book, You're a Genius, How to Reclaim Childhood Brilliance. Through her writing, consults, and workshops, she's helped thousands of people of every age to liberate lost natural genius, develop powerful visions for life and work, and develop inspired strategy for turning visions into thriving reality. Please join me in welcoming Pat Sullivan. Pat?
You're both on. It's really exciting to be here. And am I clear? And in the beginning, I was asking a few people about, what do you want to get here tonight? And someone said, I want magic. Well, we'll do our best to make it. And when I go home, whatever formula we come up with, like reveal yourself, my husband John back there will put it in Latin. And so tonight, the best spell I can think of is wake up. Wake up that brilliance that you may have long forgotten you have. In fact, one time as I've been working on my book, I took a shower and thought about, why is it so hard to talk about this topic sometimes? And I realized that it's almost like the whole world suffers a lot from genius amnesia. We have forgotten how brilliant we used to be and are supposed to be now. And school, the playground, church, and we ourselves all participated in the loss of our gifts. So this is a huge topic, and I'm going to be putting out a lot of research and ideas, so things will go pretty fast. I'd love nothing more than to be able to talk freely with you, to have a long dialogue of back and forth, and that's not possible now, but I hope it's just the beginning of a long dialogue that we may carry on in some way or you take out somewhere else. And if you're hearing this talk via the web, I invite you to check out my website, Visionary Resources, visionary-resources.com, because there's a lot of resources there on how to bring back your gifts and how to keep them alive. And I'm going to be putting a lot more stuff, particularly on the genius of all of us who are 50 or better, or like me, 70 or better. And I like being 71 in 5 days. So, you can call it a genius liberation movement or whatever else you want to call it. But I just invite you to open up your eyes, your ears, your hearts to the possibility that you were born loaded with genius potential. And it's way past time for all of us to live like the geniuses we were born to be. Too long our cultures had this strange notion that the only people who are geniuses are those rare, really smart people who are recognized for doing something spectacular, like J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame, or Albert Einstein. That's an extremely puny notion of genius. And it's a very dangerous notion because it entices us to ignore and to repress the potential for genius that's in all of us. As many of us have come through all the paradigm-shifting movements of the 60s and 70s know, it matters how we define ourselves. I remember being called girl when I graduated from one of the top colleges in the country and asked, how fast do you type? I remember cringing when African-American men were called boy and worse. We've come a long way, and there's more to go. And in these paradigm-shifting movements, we learn that if we limit ourselves to others' conceptions of us, we limit who we are and what we can do and what we're appreciated for. And I'm here to help change that. We really need some new definitions and ideas about aging today. If I listen to many of the stereotypes, I'm told that at 71, I'm too old a dog to learn new tricks. But I know that I'm just hitting my stride at 71 in 5 days. I just had a birthday. And every year since 1971 has got better for me because I've gone deeper into a study of human potential, deeper into my own consciousness, deeper and wider into connections with other people who are daring to way past, stretch the boundaries of who we are and what we can do with our lives. And I hope it's soon going to be the norm for people to be known as lively or better, juicy or wiser as we grow older. And if I were running a church service, I'd say, let's have an amen for that right now. Amen. Yay. So one of the fun things about putting yourself out as a writer or a speaker is that people bring their ideas. People bring their resources. And just yesterday, a colleague I haven't yet met in person sent me an article. Actually, it's a blog post from Harvard Business Review, which is actually one of my favorite magazines. Got about the best jokes anywhere, for if nothing else. And this article is how we can be far better entrepreneurs as we age than we can be as we're younger. Is that a surprise? It's a great surprise. And it's really especially good news since probably a fourth of people over 50, 55 are either starting a business, continuing a business, dream of having a business. I want a quick show of hands. How many people in this room here, of about 80 people, either have started, are starting, or will start some kind of business? Even if it's, and if we add to that, anyone who will move from their present career into consulting in the same field. Okay, so that's a lot of us, the majority of us here in this room. And that means a lot of us need to keep earning well into our 70s, 80s, and 90s. And we don't have to talk that much tonight about how much the economy has changed and how many of our assets have gone bye-bye. So we need to dig more into the assets within us. The Harvard Business Review article cited the long-established work of famed developmental psychologist Eric Erickson. And I want to quote this. He said, "As we grow older, the hunger for meaning animates us. It makes us more alive." His theory explains that each healthy human passes through 8 stages of development, from infancy to adulthood. The 7th stage of development typically takes place between the ages of 40 to 64. And it centers around what he called generativity. A period not of stagnation, but of productivity and creativity, including a strong commitment to mentoring and shoring up the next generation. How many of you does that describe? Yeah. How many of you hear things like this on the nightly news regularly? For those who aren't here, no hands were raised. Individuals in this development stage are supremely motivated to generate value, not just for themselves, but for others. And they're always asking the question, what can I do to make my life really count? The Business Review article noted that the over 50 crowd is also more likely to do work that matters, not just for themselves, but for future generations. And there's a lot of research showing that 55-year-olds and 65-year-olds have more innovation potential than a 25-year-old. At 71, I'm fueled by a lot of passions. I love my research. I love passing on juicy information like the Harvard Business Review article. I just want to double check. You can hear back there? Yeah, good. Even better are the moments when I'm working with someone and issues like business planning and what really matters come together, like someone saying, how do I manage this passion that calls me and get to do it and get paid for it while also have time for playing with the grandkids and taking a stained glass class? I mean, to me, that's the kind of questions we should be asking more and more. Also exquisite are the moments when I'm working with someone and they tap into their own gifts to meet great challenges. I was working with the founder of a socially responsible business one time, and her challenge was that she had to become the firm's rainmaker. She had to be the one out there giving talks. She knew the material best. She was the face of the company. She hated public speaking and wasn't very good at it. As we worked and she talked about her fears, I did a lot of work with what her body language told me and listening to her language. And we worked with reclaiming that five-year-old that's in all of us that still can get really emphatic. I like this. I think this. I want to do that. And then we could bring that, generate that wonderful imagination and spontaneity, the five-year-old, into the adult who has a big job to do. The upshot for her was she started loving public speaking, became a master at it. The firm's business doubled in 6 months. Now, that's a rare thing I've seen, but boy, was that wonderful. And that's a socially responsible firm, which means they can do more of their good work, hire more people to help do it. And I found there's really absolutely no limit to the age at which we can stay productive and creative. My dad's my role model. On his very last day on this earth, he went to the library. And he had planned to check out Impressionists. He had just gotten fascinated with it. I mean, he'd known about them all, but he was really fascinated. And he came back with a big, fat book from the library on the art of Charles, I think it's pronounced Munk, the one who did The Scream. He had never heard of that guy before. And Edgar, okay. And so he had a dinner that he totally enjoyed with my stepmother. And then a colleague called, another retired teacher, and they spent about an hour dreaming up things they could do together. So Dad went to sleep after a really rich, full day and never woke up. And I want to live that way. I've heard some people say, I want to live used up in a really good way. There's a lot of evidence that our creativity can accelerate in middle and older years. And I know there are a lot of people who choose to spend their later years getting more and more stick in the mud, more and more set in their ways, or denying the fact that we are growing older and we're facing death sooner than later. I don't choose to hang around with those people much, even when they're relatives. I choose to hang around with the increasing number of people I see who say, my elder years are getting more and more interesting every year. And a quick show of hands, how many of you finding that your years are getting more interesting as you grow older? Wow, that's at least well over half of us, most of us. I see a lot of people who are blossoming and will keep doing that for the rest of our lives. This is an amazing time to be growing older. Brain research is exploding, and not just on the PBS at pledge time, you know. It is really exploding. There's a lot of research about what we can learn from the longevity hotspots around the world where people routinely live healthily and happily to their hundreds, where disease that kill us regularly are pretty unknown. There's a lot of people just coming together and doing things that are more fascinating. And brain works. A lot of what happens, I think, when people just get together of our age is we start sharing what we know. And I want to take a moment of listing some of the things I've learned about the ways that we may have gifts and attitudes that we've just developed by growing older and experiencing life. First, to the extent that we're conscious, by the time we've hit 50 or so, we've been around the block enough to have a valuable experience. We listen less to peer pressure and more to our inner sense of what's right for us. Here's a statistic from this week's news. Women of 59 are much more likely to feel comfortable wearing a bikini in public than younger women are. Surprise? I'm not saying we look better than we did with the, and I'm certainly not saying I'm going to get a bikini. But I am going to learn to be a better belly dancer. And I intend to learn the Bhangra or Bollywood style dancing, and I'm not worried about whoever thinks I'm silly to try to do it. Second, the fact is that our lives are time limited is a much more obvious to us than it was when we were 20 or 30 or 40. So that's an amazing motivator to do the best today, to make the most of today, not wait for tomorrow or next month or next year or 20 years from now. Third, the senior years, particularly today, are filled with opportunities for adventure and creativity. Every good senior center I know is loaded with amazing classes where you can learn art of all kinds. And you can take on things that you stopped trying long ago. A lot of us were told by people what we can't do. Maybe someone said to you, "You can't sing. Your drawing's silly. Boys don't cry. Girls shouldn't be too good at sports." Who cares at our age now? We can try all those things we didn't think we were good at. We can have fun at it in spite of the class bullies that hung around then. In fact, one of my favorite fantasies is the special place in hell I've created for all the bullies of my life. So, and I send them there regularly. I spoke to one man in his late 70s at a senior center who said he had taken a poetry writing class for the first time in his life, and it just blew his mind. He said, "I started finding gifts and ideas I never imagined I would have. I've never been more confident about myself. I've never had more hope in the future." That is not a rare kind of thing to happen. It's common. Fourth, there's a natural tendency as we age to make more time for what really matters. When I was growing up in the 50s, Grandma Moses was really famous. And the big story they told about her was that she didn't discover her painting talent until she was in her 70s. That's not true. She enjoyed painting when she was a kid, but she stopped in her teens because she thought, "I don't have time now. I'm growing up. I've got children to take care of. And she didn't start painting again until her 70s, when her children were all grown and she felt like she could dare take all the time she wanted to paint. A lot of people are finding now, I got to start taking the time for me now. And a lot of the attitudes have been shifting, particularly among women. We don't have to be there taking care of everyone else. We're here to live our lives too. Fifth, as we grow older, we tend to reflect more. And there's a lot to be said for reflecting, whatever you call it. My great-grandpa Kivett in Tennessee had a small cave where he retreated every now and then whenever the tensions of life got to be too much. And a lot of those tensions came from great-grandma Kivett. And he was a Civil War veteran who'd helped lay track for the Union Pacific Railroad and been all over the place. She was hard-shell Baptist, which basically my dad described as, if it's fun, we're against it. So I don't know how they stay married. So Grandma Kivett called the cave Grandpa's pouting place. And she meant that as an insult. My dad thought it was a great honor. And he brought us up to think that all of us need to have some place where we can go, not just to think, but where we have to sit on our own juices and face up to the fact that, you know, I'm not so perfect either. And I love it. My dad said sometimes his shop was his. My mother's parents had their garden or their shop or other places where they could just pound off a real good mat and come back and be civil with each other afterwards. One of the great things I found about reflection is it really goes beyond just relaxing and getting out stress. It so often gets down into the very deep consideration of, this is where I've been, this is who I am, this is what I've learned, and this is what I'm still called to do with this one precious life. More and more, I love hanging out with people who are my age and older, and just swapping tales, the way Dad used to describe the old guys of his childhood hanging around in front of the country store, swapping their tales. Now, the gifts of aging that I've already mentioned are magnificent, but there's more. Because now I want to talk about an expanded, just beyond the experience we already have, and into the whole concept of genius. And for this, I'm grateful to my husband John's definition that he brought from an actual dictionary on genius. And it turns out that the most common definition of genius today, which means the rarely spectacular person who does something outrageously magnificent, like Einstein, that's a pretty much of a Johnny-come-lately definition. It's become the primary one for most people, but it's not really a necessary definition. The next most recent definition is the idea that genius means our talents. Now, there are a lot of people, particularly like Barbara Sher, who speaks a lot on the each of us having a single genius or one or more geniuses, so, and equating our genius with our talents. And I'll go along with that as long as you don't limit my genius to my talents, and I hope you don't either. The two older meanings of genius aren't well known, but those two significantly expand our possibilities for a rich life. The second oldest meaning of genius says, our genius includes the personification of all our natural appetites and inclinations. Have you ever heard that? It's in the dictionary, or some of them. In other words, the things that fascinate us are important cues to who we are and what we're called to do with life. This definition of genius easily fits into all the best creative advice I have ever heard, which is to explore fascinating ideas and callings, even if they don't seem useful. Now, that's counter to so much advice a lot of us were given, to just put out that foolishness out of our head and start getting practical way too early. But I want to give you an example of someone who lived by that definition of genius as the inclinations, and that's Steve Jobs. He credits a class he took at Reed College on calligraphy with being the inspiration for the design of the Apple computer. And you may have heard this story. If you Google his famous commencement speech to Stanford graduates, I think it was 2005, he really goes into detail about how intrigued he was by calligraphy and how fascinated and how it really led to the ideas of Apple. And he was always encouraging people to listen to what fascinates you. Don't get practical prematurely. Not fun. So a lot of my work over the past 40 years has given me a real appreciation for the power of natural inclinations. Some of these are unique to each of us, like one person's passion for storytelling or another person's passion for acting out stories. Those are us, and we've each got different ones. But I sometimes see inclinations as precursors for our talents, and even more important in the beginning. In other words, if you don't limit yourself to what you already know you're good at, and if you do more of what delights you, you'll become good at that which you love. A lot of people will fall into that line of thinking more and more lately. Barbara Sher tells a story of a woman who despaired of ever getting a job she loved because she said, I'm doomed. I love opera. I'd love to sing opera. My voice is like a frog. It's too late to learn how to do anything. You know, what can I do? And Barbara said, okay, imagine, just play for a moment. Imagine you've just sung at the Met. You're taking your bow to great applause. What happens next? And the woman goes, oh, I take my friends backstage. They finally get it, why I love opera, because I've taken them back to see the costumes and how it puts together. And Barbara says, oh, so your real passion is not for singing opera, but for turning other people on to opera. How doable is that? And After John brought me that definition of genius, I knew I had to play with it a lot. And so I did one of my favorite visioning exercises. I took a shower. Take a lot of them when I write books and just let the water wash over and think, what do I got to learn from this? And I realized that when we talk about the inclinations we're born with, I'd like to include all the amazing things that seem to come in our DNA because you see them exhibited so beautifully by children of the ages of baby to five. And I bet some of you already know what I'm going to talk about. Our inclinations include instincts that from our birth propel us out into the world to learn how first to lift our head, to crawl, to move around, to walk, to create language, to connect with other people. Sheer instinct starts it. Our inclinations include imagination, which is fully flowering from ages 3 to 5. Our inclinations include emotional life and many types of perception, which lead to an increasing awareness of what we feel, like, or dislike, and the ability to express emotions and preferences. We also come programmed for playfulness, for awe and wonder, which is an amazing foundation for a marriage or a spiritual community. And we come filled with a drive to know who we are, discover our talents, and use them well in the world. Now, all these gifts are amazingly valued. When they're appreciated and strengthened, they are the foundation for adult, grown-up genius. But too often, they get quashed. One of the speakers at Commonwealth Club recently was Sir Ken Robinson, who's also the number one speaker so far on the TED Talks. And if you don't know the TED Talks, boy, you're going to have a ball. And he speaks often about how our education system wipes the creativity out of us. And there's a statistic similar to one I found in grad school saying that between 90 to 98% of all 3 to 5-year-olds regularly test at genius level for what they call divergent thinking, or the ability to think up many possibilities for any situation. Less than 2% of adults register that high. I think that's a crime. Fortunately, all these gifts that we had from ages 3 to 5 are still within us, and we can bring them back. And that's been the focus of a lot of my work. And I'll give you some of the ideas I've learned for doing that in a few minutes. But the oldest and final meaning of true genius is one that I think really explodes our possibilities to be a genius, and that's guiding spirit. Our genius is our guiding spirit. In the old times, that meant something like a guiding spirit, maybe a voice from a god. It also became known sometimes like the voice of a muse, like if you're a writer or a poet, you know, the muse would come whisper something in your ear. And my artist, Suzanne, who's sitting in the back, has drawn a picture of that that we have outside that you can see on one of the pieces of paper we have. Our guiding spirit, more and more, has become known as not necessarily just the voices outside us, but the guiding voice within, the inner voice. The voice that speaks to us anytime. Sometimes it's in very mundane things like, you know, you better go get that mammogram. You know, you better check your wheels and your tires before you go on a trip. Very mundane things. Or it can speak about things like, you know that shy guy you're seeing across the room? That's your soulmate. You've been looking for him. Enjoy. Be cool. Don't push him away. And it could speak, as it did for me once as I was walking up a mountain in Scotland and saying, you know your idea of your plans to go back to D.C. when vacation is over and, you know, go into urban planning school? Nah, that's not for you. You want to study bioenergetics, which is a body-based psychotherapy that had changed my life at 71. Thank God I listened to that voice. Now, I've learned over the years that my inner voice speaks simply, cleanly, quietly. A lot of times it tells me things I really don't want to hear, particularly around taking better care of myself. And it tells me a lot of sometimes, you know, you're really getting pretty obnoxious, Pat. But the true inner voice will always be there. And I think it's a lifetime process of learning to listen to it. And the inner voice speaks in many, many ways. Every person I've talked to can has a slightly different way of dealing with that. And I found that there's no way I could imagine navigating the challenges of growing older without having that inner voice or guiding spirit. You know, we've got too many challenges ahead of us. And we live in a society where there's economic challenges left and right. We're not appreciated. We've got housing challenges, health challenges. And the only way I know how to deal with those is to work with the best that's out there in the world and create some new, better, and to be able to navigate things. We've long known about the earlier, the two versions of genius, two definitions of genius that I spoke about first. The idea that genius is some spectacular action by a person, or that it's a talent. When we add those two earlier definitions, that we've got an amazing guiding voice and we've got all these inclinations, I think that really opens up the playing field. And my vision for us is that all of us who are 50 and older collectively and individually take on the task of reclaiming whatever gifts we gave up as we grew up. And we learn how to listen to ourselves, our hearts. We develop really powerful guiding spirits. We learn how to trust which inclinations are worth following and which are not. And we hang out with each other and we get together and we really create a better life for ourselves and each other. Now, there's some tips and how-tos to get there. We take a breath. You ready for a little more? Oh, good. The first one is there's no way to bring out your genius if it's hidden by the elephants in the room. In a lot of families, the gifts get hidden because there's a violent parent, there's alcoholism, there's sexual abuse, there's other kinds of molestation. In my family, we were not supposed to ever admit we had anger towards each other, because anger was what something the drunks down the street did on Saturday night when they had too many drinks and they threw things at each other. I had no idea that anger was a gift to let me know when I didn't like something and could help me set good boundaries. There's also the elephants in the room. Any time we have our self-illusions and don't want to see who we are. As elders, there's two big elephants in the room that I think all of us have to face. Number one is we're going to die. You're going to die. I'm going to die. Don't know when. I've got at least another 30 years, and I'm dancing on the beach at 100. But I can't guarantee that. The second is, at any time, I could get helpless. I could become a burden on somebody, which is a huge fear of a lot of people. I hear that a lot. And if we're going to let those elephants stay there and not deal with them, we'll have a lot of complicity in doing it. There's the talk, I believe, the next week on it here at Commonwealth Club is about facing a lot of those elephants. And you'll find that a lot of times when, as someone is older, they really want to face talking about death and how, what's meaning for them, and when I want someone to say enough already, and their children aren't ready to do it. It's not a conversation that's easy, so I really hope people come to that one. I have found that there's an amazing resource in Kaiser's Advanced Healthcare Directive, which we start using with the optional section in the back, where you start asking, when is life no longer meaningful? And you get that clear, and then it's easy to answer the other things. And it's also important, I've found, with people I've worked with, to really ask, who can I really trust? What do I really need? Yes, my husband or my mother or my sister is the person who matters most to me. But is this person capable of finding documents when it's time? Can this person face up to authorities? Will this person cave in? Or can I trust that person to follow my wishes even when it's scary? And I found a lot of people saying, you know, my brother, when our mother was dying, said, I can't go through this. And she said, I had put him down as the person to have my power of attorney, and I realized I can't do that for him. I need someone else. So there's an amazing thing that happens when you do face the elephants. It's like life opens up. For John and me, we actually made an agreement that we have permission to be a burden on each other. But that's also brought out a commitment for each of us to be more self-responsible. So that minimizes the burden we have on each other. I feel less and less worry about the future and more hope because of that. The second thing is do a little personal archaeology. That's a term I made up when I was at the King Tut exhibit in 1976 in Washington, D.C. And I don't know if you've had a chance to watch the Tut exhibits, but boy, they're amazing. And I was standing by one of the exhibits for must have been an hour because I was just fascinated. It was a little goddess Selkit. And a woman came up to me and she said, "What a tragedy it would have been if all this beauty had stayed under the sands in Egypt and didn't get to see it." And I realized there's an even bigger tragedy when all of us are walking around with treasures hidden in our heart and souls and minds, and we don't even know they're there. So personal archaeology, there's a lot of ways to do it. For me, a lot of it was therapy, a lot of theater games, a lot of journaling, a lot of talking, a lot of body work. We all have different ways of doing it. One of the books I love to recommend is the old standby, The Artist's Way. Whatever works for you. The third thing is get creative. We were blessed, John and I, to be part of a graduate program at Holy Names University under Matthew Fox. I don't know if any of you are familiar with his works. Very popular writer on spirituality. And a big part of that program was everybody had to take a number of classes in what they called artist meditation. So here you're in a program with 100 and some other people who have come together to explore who we are and what we can be. And people are taking art classes for the first time in 10, 20, 30, 40, 60 years. Because we had people up there late into their 70s and 80s. And amazing things happened as people started digging into clay or playing music for the first time or drawing or finger painting. It's like a lot of gifts awaken up. It's almost impossible to do artwork without worrying about what you're creating and have a lot wake up in you. I cannot over-recommend it. There's a group in Oakland called Stagebridge where people over 50 get out and do a lot of theater games. They have a ball, and there are probably a lot more. The fourth recommendation I make is to get inspired by the 1960s and the 1970s. We're paradigm shifters in our age. We cut our wisdom teeth on paradigm shifting. We said, hell no, we're not going to wars we don't believe in. We said no to injustices towards women, civil rights, the environment, a lot of things. There's a lot we can learn from those years. And basically what I see that we did is we got together one by one, two by two, large groups, and said, what do we hate that's going on? What do we want to change? What are our visions? What works? Let's pass it around. And I remember there were often things like teach-ins. Well, there's a lot of resources around, like the pack that we got from PBS on Superbrain. That's sitting in our house right now. Probably some of you have the same kind of thing. Isn't it time to get together with friends and watch some of these things together and let our brains come together? What can we take with this great stuff and run with it? Number five is to develop fluency in your heart language. Now, I had never heard the word heart language, as far as I know, until I meditated one night in the late 80s or sometime early 90s. And it was a hard and terrible, painful time. And out of that meditation came this short poem, or whatever you call it. Dare to dream, to speak the language of your heart, to shape its longings into clear visions with solid goals and objectives. Dare to do, to build your visions with integrity and the joy of stretching your skills far beyond their present capacity. This is where I could spend a lot of time with everyone, and I am going to say, because time is short, check out my website. I'm not trying to push you to buy anything, but there's loads of resources there. That's why I call myself Visionary Resources. And particularly there, some of them are listed in the back. And one of my favorites was how much I learned from Albert Schweitzer, my big hero since I was 8 years old. He really taught me that vision is something you don't have to go off on a vision quest in the desert. You can do it right here, right now, in the midst of life. And just try it. That we can have lots of conversations on this. The final thing is to practice. We didn't unlearn our natural gifts overnight. We won't reclaim them all overnight. And we won't become geniuses overnight. It's going to take practice. And fortunately, practice is fun, particularly when we do it with our buddies. So I can't believe we have all these years ahead of us for any other reason than to live out the rest of our life, enjoy it, and leave the world better for our presence here. Excuse me. Thank you. All right.
To remind our listening audience, this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Pat McHenry Sullivan, Finding Your Childhood Genius. Pat, I know there are questions in the audience. Will you take questions?
Yes.
Will you take them from a squeaky mic?
Yes, that's fine. I have to wear this to hold onto the mic. We have some heat in here. Comments? Can you use it so people can hear it if they're listening later?
Okay. There we go. Resources available on the site, specifically developing fluency in your heart language, that really spoke to me.
Okay. The resources that are on there, first of all, the poem is on there of Dare to Dream, Dare to Do. The section there of facts about being visionary, that all speaks about that. One of the first pieces I ever wrote called How to Find Visions for Work and Life is there. And particularly what I learned from Albert Schweitzer. And I cannot think about Albert Schweitzer a lot without just crying and saying thank you. I'm very blessed that I got to know his daughter and many of the people who worked with him. And his whole life from the time he was 8 was dedicated to service, creativity, nature. And he just learned how to listen to his life. And I would add, if you can read any of his stories about his life, like Out of My Life and Times, you'll have in many ways a textbook for how to listen to yourself.
Thank you.
And I'll be adding more from time to time because thank you.
I'll start off with a bad analogy, but children can't imagine their parents having sex. Right. Parents can't imagine their parents having sex. At 50 or 60, 50, 60, can't imagine 80 or 90s having sex. But what I'm really interested in is while developing our own sense of worth as we age is kind of what we're talking about here, but as my wife and I have talked about it, as we're younger, appreciating the value of older people, miss it. We dismiss older people, whether we're, you know.
Yeah.
As we think about it, as we've talked about, as we think about almost every age, we sort of dismiss the value.
The question is about how we tend to dismiss the wisdom of people who are older. I am greatly inspired by the gay movement. That has changed. Attitudes have changed. Laws are changing. Action are changing. Because one person after another dared to say, this is who I am, and I'm wonderful. And people dared to come out of the closet of who they were. And I think it's time for everyone over 50 to come out of the closet as a dynamic, exciting, loving, loved person. You know, we can't hide around and say, well, I'm doing everything not to look. I met a woman who was gorgeous. I had no idea how old she was. She could have been anywhere from 40-some to 80-some. You can't tell these days. She did not want anyone to know that she was in her 80s. Well, you don't have to stand up and say what your age is. But I think it's time for us to just get out there. The Gray Panthers got something started years ago. You know, Maggie, I can't remember her last name, but, you know, really let's stand up and fight. But, you know, it's time to just be out there, put out who we are and what we're doing, put out our questions. And children had an amazing relationships with grandparents when they were younger. Most of us did. But that relationship often went away by the time we were adolescents. So I think a lot of it's up to us to get out there and let people see who we are and what matters, whether or not, you know, they like our bikinis or whatever, you know.
Thank you very much for your inspiring talk. You talked about all the opportunities that we have. I'm finding so many stops and also age discrimination, to look for any kind of work. Plus, I'm an artist, and, you know, even when you're younger, it can be hard to get that. I want to do more acting and voiceovers. And now I'm also having a great deal of trouble getting new housing that's even affordable. So, you know, I need to have a lot of opportunities, but there's so many stops and barriers, and it's okay. Difficulty. Can you say something?
Okay. Oh, I have one. I'm not going to speak tonight to specific barriers, but I know that throughout history there have been barriers. And I'm not going to whitewash it. There's huge barriers for people over 50 in terms of discrimination. And the only thing I know to do with barriers is to find a way to get around them or over them. And most of the time it's get around it. I'm really drawn by a group called the Brain Exchange, where women get together to brainstorm what they can do and connect with each other. I put a couple resources in there, particularly for entrepreneurship, the Hub. There's one in San Francisco, one in Berkeley, and one starting in Oakland, where people can come together and put out ideas. Barbara Sher's work is loaded. Any book by Barbara Sher is brilliant about how to know what matters to you and how to brainstorm around it, how to do it, and how to support each other. And one of the things I learned from her in a workshop in the 70s and has never left me is that it's very much easier for us to brainstorm for each other than it is for ourselves, and to have courage for each other than it is for ourselves. So we need that support to get past it. And it's not easy. There's another resource in there, the Live Smart Over 50 that I put in, which comes out from a wonderful group called Life Plan Network. And I think it's just going to be ongoing work to face whatever challenges we have. Yes? Okay.
Well, I was just going to say, it's only at the pinnacle of civilization that so many people are able to live healthy and long lives. And our civilization has a number of challenges. And I think that instead of being used as a scapegoat, the aging of societies, the non-productive, you know, burden of older people on essentially the developed world, I think in order not to continually repeat the tragic downfalls of civilization, we are in a position to essentially take the wisdom that we've learned, the knowledge that we've learned, to fall back on the fact that it's the generations right now aging that did change the world in so much back, you say, in the 60s and 70s. So I think coming together with a purpose, both to take care of ourselves and also to help direct the world instead of just repeating the rises and the falls that civilizations tend to face.
Yeah.
I think that burden's on us. We've dodged the bullets. We've jumped through the hoops. What did we get? We got old, but now we learned all that.
Yep.
So
And I want to add something I forgot before. I really envision a world full of what I call senior brain trust, or we can call it something else. I'd love to see groups of us, say we're a group of 10 or 12, and you all are a 10 or group of 12, and there's another group of 10 or 12, and we come together to do visioning and brainstorming. And we tackle questions like, say you're the center of how do I make it as an artist? How do I deal kid past this? And we brainstorm. And there's a method I learned from Michael Beckwith down at Agape Church in L.A. His visioning process is you start by doing a data dump. You write down all the things you think you know about a subject. You wipe your slate clean in meditation. You just go totally clean. And then you open up and you pray or meditate, whatever you call it, till you get down and you invite any whispers of new ideas to come in. And it doesn't matter how they come in, you can play with them. When we were doing it in our group, there was always this one guy who would never trust what came through for him because sometimes it would just be an image. And he had no idea what it meant. But the next person and the person after would go, wow, that gives me this idea. So maybe you have a catalyst or something else. The thing is, a group of 10 or 12 of us, we're at least 144 times more smart than we are alone. And that's an amazing thing. And I think it's time for us to get together, claim our wisdom, and get together and start brain trusting.
Hi, Pat, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For the lady in the front who had concerns about housing options, perhaps you can explain the village movement to her.
Oh, yeah.
And also, upcoming in Berkeley is a meeting of the Bay Area Senior Women's Housing Options Group.
Yeah.
Which I'll be happy to tell you about.
Yeah, there's a lot. Can you see Francine at the end? Because I don't want to go into all these specifics. But I did mention in the resources the Senior Village Movement. And that's for staying in your houses. But I remember in the 60s, I lived in group houses a number of times. And it wasn't all drugs, rock and roll, like people said it was. It was rich. It was satisfying. It was fulfilling. And it was a lot cheaper than the other options. And I'm really considering that with my husband later, because I don't want to just live the two of us. I want privacy for me and for us and him to have his privacy. But there are ways to have that in larger groups, and that's something that's just being considered all over the place. If you join a group like Brain Exchange, you can put out that question, you know, what are some of the housing options? And it's something to explore a lot of ways. You can start a meetup group around it. You know, we are so loaded with ways to play with our questions and creativity. Yes?
Just my own experience as I'm living in a retirement community, and I hooked up with an internet startup company that was putting a internet, sort of a Facebook within our community. And I've been working with her, and, you know, I'm certainly a senior, and I've worked with her for the last 2 years, and this is kind of, you know, I didn't grow up with the internet. I, of course, was in business myself, but what I found was, because I was in business for so many years, that my experience in business was so good for her marketing, not for the technical part, but for the marketing. And we have worked together now for nearly 2 years, and certainly there is opportunity out there. We live in this hub of internet startups, and there are many seniors that would be very valuable to some of the startup groups just from their experience in being in business.
Yeah. I hope that just tonight starts some groups going, on any of these issues. Please don't be shy. The time for being shy and worrying about being too polite is over. We don't have time to futz around. We're hurting. Other people are hurting. And one of our biggest hurts is our gifts aren't being used. So the more we can get together and get over the shy and go meet some people and say, hi, are you interested in checking out thus and so? Would you like to try out a brain trust? You know, you've got my contact information. Use it. I love to answer questions. I love to tell people where to go and what to do. You don't have to do it. So, yes.
Now, one thing you didn't mention is the value of physical exercise. When I retired about 5 years ago, moved into the city, I joined the wonderful gym at the JCC. This morning, I was the only male and with 25 ladies in a jazzercise class.
Wow.
I'm called the eunuch in the harem. And, the other thing is we all have, a lot of us have back problems. The only thing that's ever been proved to help back problems and prevent recurrence of these facet syndromes, they call them, is to get on a stationary bike three times a week for 20-plus minutes and work out the machine. And I feel better than I have had in years, and I think it's a very important thing, being sound of body as well as sound
Absolutely.
Of mind.
Absolutely. And it was in my list of things to say, and I just had to cut it down. But I'm sorry I skipped that. That's huge. And our physicality was part of our genius as we were kids. And it's coming back. I mean, I've been excited to see. My husband and I have been working with a woman who has Parkinson's, and we found amazing things for her. Like every week now she goes to a swim class that's just for people who have balance problems. And the working in the pool with balance issues with someone who's a trained Feldenkrais practitioner, which is amazing for back problems. She does that, and it really has helped her whole life. There are other classes in singing that help Parkinson. That's over at Piedmont Gardens in Oakland. I mean, things cross. If you're engaging fully in anything, you know, it bounces off into the other areas of life. So thank you for mentioning the physicality. Someone is over here?
Yes. As a teacher, every September I tell the parents that our biggest challenge as educators and as parents is not to kill that natural genius that you talked about in children. And I'm seeing that it's even more true at our age. And one of the challenges that I see is that I'm very saddened by the number of my peers who seem to be, when they retire, they sit around, they watch television, and they mourn their glory days. And they don't do much else. And I feel really kind of helpless because it makes me sad, and I don't know what to say other than, hey, get off your butt and come out and play.
Maybe you could say it in a more inviting way. Come out and play. I mean, that's a really good question that I'd love to see the Senior Brain Trust or whatever we call it. I'd love to see it take that on, because sitting around and just watching TV isn't going to help everybody. It's going to make us fatter, slower, want more drugs. Anyhow.
Pat, our time is about gone. If people have questions, will you remain for a few minutes?
I definitely will.
Individually? Okay. All right. Well, we want to thank Pat Sullivan for her wonderful talk tonight.
One of the best.
Thank you.
One of the best. This will be on the website under past events. You can look and you can hear it again, or you can refer it to your friends if you'd like.
If you are interested in my new book, Your Genius, How to Reclaim Childhood Brilliance, see CT, who's standing there. She'll be at the table right by the door. It's not out yet, but it's coming soon, and you can go ahead and get it.
Thank you so much, Pat McHenry Sullivan. We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 110th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you.